All right, good morning, everybody. I know that it's a little early, but my timer has started. So let's go ahead and see how folks are doing this morning. And then we'll launch into the content itself. So quick question for people, just show of hands. How many folks were able to catch the SP1 overview session yesterday for Configuration Manager? Let's just see. I caught it. I was actually in it, so and I've since watched it later, so I thought it was a very good presentation. But any feedback? What did you guys think of the content that we provided yesterday? Any thoughts? Anything we could have done better? What was the top new thing that struck people as something I'm going to go home and implement that tomorrow? The instant download policy? Yes. I think I mentioned yesterday, I'm sick and tired of people talking about SMS as slow-moving software or slow-moving server or something that has the word slow in it. I think we're starting to put a little bit of that behind us. What about, so we showed a few interesting things yesterday. The two demos that we spent time on were the notification server, also known as the big green button. We were not going to really talk about that too much today because that was covered yesterday. The other thing that we spent some in-depth time on yesterday was the wake-up proxy. I'm always available to talk about wake-up proxy if you have questions about that feature, but we will not be talking about that today in this session. Most of what we're going to be talking about will be the infrastructure piece. There's really kind of a continuum for all the Config Manager presentations. That overview session serves, as Dilip mentioned yesterday, as a wine tasting, an ability to have little bits and pieces of functionality to preview, and then you can come to these sessions. This is the infrastructure session. We have the sessions for the different application lifecycle and also for OSD and MDT. Those are the sessions where you can drink deeply of the new functionality and ask some of those in-depth questions. So, any other? Let me think. What else? What else can we do in the next 1 minute before we officially start? Let's see a show of hands. Who has or is either planning or is deploying a hierarchy with more than 100,000 devices? More than 100,000. So we've got a couple. Or three or four. So that is not surprising, actually. We've seen our SQIM data. We've seen the way people are purchasing. So very few customers have hierarchies of more than 100,000. So just to kind of get a feel then, maybe I don't want to assume that everyone else has got a hierarchy. So how many folks are deploying hierarchies of less than 100,000? All right, so good number of y'all here. So of that group that hit the 100,000, and I asked the same question yesterday, how many of you deployed hierarchies as opposed to standalone primaries? How many hierarchies for less than 100,000? All right. So how many of you deployed them because when you went to look at standalone primaries, we gave you a scary error message that said you'll never be able to set up a CAS ever again? Anybody see that one? Yeah. I've actually gotten a lot of feedback that there were folks who were bound and determined to use a single primary site, and then they would go through the wizard and they'd get that scary error message, hey, guess what? Unless you set up a CAS right now, you will never have that option ever again. And so they went ahead and moved forward with future proofing. So we'll talk a little bit about how we've gotten around that. So, but it's right at 8:30 now, so let's go ahead and get started. My name is Jason Adams. I am a program manager with the Configuration Manager product group. My specialty is the performance and scalability of both Windows Intune and also Configuration Manager. If you've looked on TechNet and you've seen that guidance about how many clients can be supported by a given site, how many DPs, how many MPs, all of that is based on work that my team does to try and stress the product and to find its scalable limits. And we do that with a combination of simulated testing as well as some client testing, although we don't really get more than 2,000 real clients. Most of what we do is actually simulation. So if you have any questions about how we get those numbers, what have you, what I can tell you based on what I've seen in benches and environments we have stressed Configuration Manager as far as it can be stressed is that, quite frankly, that 100,000 is something that's easily achievable. We've put it under as much stress. We've put under 200,000 clients. We've done patch Tuesdays that occur with the maximum patch Tuesday that's ever happened, and we've been able to get that standalone primary to chug along pretty fast. And we are constantly taking fixes to address the little bumps in the road that occur during that. So one thing that if you walk away today knowing that those standalone primaries are extremely robust, and when you remove replication from the picture, you'll find that the underlying infrastructure of the primary side is rock solid. But let's get into today's slides proper. And I think all of you have seen some version of the challenges today, but we'll go ahead and review for everyone. As you know, there are a lot of users out there, and what we're asking them to do now is to be able to do their work from any location. And on top of that, there are tons of devices that we're asking them to do that work on. I mean, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago in IT, we were all trying to get a consistent desktop. You know, have like one or two different footprints, a particular PC that they would be able to use. And that made it very simple to use Configuration Manager to drop a client and then manage what they do. But today, it's not about the PC device. It's about devices that are handheld. It's about tablets. It's about slates. It's also about desktops. It's about the whole panoply of things that can be done. Embedded devices, registers, you name it, it's out there. So the explosion of devices coupled with users trying to use those devices and in turn trying to use the business critical applications that keep modern business going. So that on top of that, in order to actually get any value from those business critical applications, they need to have access to the internal business data. So all of this comes together into this cauldron of users, devices. This is actually playing good. All right. Users, devices, apps, and data. So what do we need to do in order to resolve this issue? To take this maelstrom of all these different people trying to use all these different devices with all these different apps and all this data that we need to keep safe. Well, what Microsoft is doing is putting together an offering based on three pillars: management, access, and protection. Being able to manage those devices and users, be able to give access to the data, but at the same time to do it in a secure manner. And from a server tools and business perspective, that turns into being able to empower users so they have access to these experiences on these devices. Being able to unify the environment so that the administrative footprint of the infrastructure required to deliver this is small enough to manage while also providing those powerful experiences. And finally, being able to protect your data. Being able to take that data, provide it to the user, and yet be able to safeguard it if a device is missing or a device is lost or the user is no longer with the company. And more palpable from our server business and specifically Configuration Manager and client management is we're looking at having a single pane of glass of being able to unite Windows Intune, which is a cloud-based service with a robust device strategy, with Configuration Manager, an on-premises product, and between its various incarnations with SMS 2.0 all the way up through Config Manager 2007 and 2012, has provided industry-leading solutions for on-premises management. So you can then see through that single pane of glass, you'll have the robust on-premises desktop Mac support experience, along with a new and growing device support story that has all the new tablets, devices, phones, you name it, all together in one. All of that managed through the Config Manager console. So that's sort of the high-level view. That's what all of us with the client management team from Server Tools and Business, the Config Manager, the Intune team, that's what we're talking about. But let's bring this down to what we're talking about in this room today, which is infrastructure, right? So this is that part about the unifying the management, but simplifying that management. And what we're going to do is talk about hierarchy simplification. Many of you heard those words when we were putting together 2012. We were going to simplify hierarchies. We'll talk about how we've extended hierarchy simplification into Service Pack 1 and R2. We'll also talk about content management. So content management is a big word that basically boils down to packages and distribution points. We'll talk about how we've introduced new things, especially in R2, that will make content more scalable. To go back to some of those estimates that we had in 2007 and 2003, where the number of distribution points on a site was something that was said in thousands, not in hundreds. We'll also talk about how we've improved the reporting system. Now, I've had a couple questions. Why is improving the reporting system something to do with infrastructure? And what we've done by putting in these new security rules is made it so that the reporting system supports you having fewer sites because you can delegate control to users without having to set up a whole other box in order to do that. We'll dive into that a little bit. We'll have a nice demo for you. And then finally, there's a bullet on here that says infrastructure management, and basically that's my potpourri category. We've got a lot of small things we've put together, most of it based on user feedback, and we'll go through a quick hit list of those things. A lot of you, seeing some familiar faces out there, so a lot of you will actually see things on this slide and say, yeah, I actually remember asking for that. So I hope that you have that experience as we go through it. But diving in more specifically about how we've simplified hierarchies, this picture right here, the very first picture you've seen from you, is actually an abstraction of a customer's hierarchy that was for 2007. In 2007, if you recall, I may not have to recall, you may have it right now. In 2007, we had this idea of very deep hierarchies, but we also had an idea that every primary site was basically its own little kingdom. And what that means is that they were unique. They were precious snowflakes. Whatever was on that primary site was something that may not occur or exist on another primary site. In fact, if you wanted to have an in-depth look at what was going on with the clients that were being managed by that primary, the best place to go was to that primary, right? So what we did is we took this mishmash, this deep level of primary sites where, and I don't know about you, but the deepest one I ever worked on was an 8-deep hierarchy, 8 primary sites all chained together. And using new SQL replication, using support for multiple domain site roles, adding in our initial implementation of role-based access, and doubling our per-site hierarchy support limits for scale, we've been able to take the extremely deep hierarchy and turn it into something that, at most, is 3 layers deep. It's a 3-layer dip as opposed to a 7-layer dip, which in this case makes it much more hardy. Going into SP1 and R2, we take that 3-layer, and we make it more and more credible to replace it with a single layer. Now, what you're seeing here for this single layer is a standalone primary and some secondary sites. Once again, for nearly everyone in this room, there should be a solution available to you where you can use a standalone primary in order to support your end users. Now, what that means is you don't have to take on the burden of replication. You don't have to take on the additional SQL licenses. You don't need to take on the additional infrastructure requirements to have all these primary sites all across the world in order to support that. There are ways to do this with this simplified hierarchy. And what we've done to enable that is provide you with site expansion to get rid of that scary error message that used to appear if you chose to install a standalone primary. If you recall, that message said you'll never be able to have a CAS, so think twice before you choose to do this. We've added back in an ability to expand your site into a hierarchy if you need to. We've added multiple software update points. In R2, we've made what seems like a small change, but is actually fairly large, the ability to have multiple network access accounts. Those of you who've ever tried to use operating system deployment have encountered the limit that you can only have one of those accounts per site. And so what happens is if you try to deploy these site roles into multiple domains or try to manage multiple domains with one primary, you'd run into this limit of, well, I guess I can only deploy operating systems to one domain. We've worked around that and given you a different option. And finally, the role-based security applied to reports. Once again, simplifying these hierarchies. So specifically, let's dive in and talk about site expansion, the scary error message that's now gone away. So you can do, as I said, most of your management using one standalone primary. The reason why you might need more, though, is scale. So 100,000 is actually a hard limit that comes from the software updates component. WSUS itself is hardwired to not accept more than 100,000 clients under management. So when you hit that level, you're going to need a hierarchy, at least until we can convince the WSUS team to change their code. So how that works and what you do is you set up your primary site and you install brand new CAS. Now, a lot of confusion working with administrators. They think back to the 2007, the 2003 days, and they think that this is analogous to site attached, you know, the building block of hierarchies back in the older implementations of SMS and Config Manager. It's not. What we do is create a brand new central administration site, and at the moment of creation, we point to that child primary. When the site gets set up, it does a global data initialization. It basically pulls up all the important data from the primary site. And then once you've built the CAS, you can then deploy out additional primary sites to support the larger scale. Now, once you've done that deployment, you've gotten the primary site to be set up, a couple things to be aware of. You will see some syncing occurring because, in essence, you've taken what used to be the top-level site in your environment and put it as a child site. There's a new top-level site. There's some syncing that needs to occur for that. So you'll see some spikes in software updates. You'll see a new default bootwim magically appear. And you'll also see that there are some packages that were originally created on the standalone primary. They definitely replicate everywhere and can be used everywhere, but when it comes down to actually processing them, if there's a change or an update or something needs to be recompressed, that will occur on the primary site because it belongs to the primary site. By the way, that's something that is not unique. Any package technically belongs to the site that it is created when it comes to actual processing for it. You can manipulate it, change it, update it on any site that you want, but the actual processing, the actual movement of Distribution Manager will occur on the site that it, quote-unquote, belongs to. So going back to this idea of attach versus site expansion, what I did is I went back and I talked to the folks in CSS and our customer service and support and asked them, when do you see customers asking for site attach in 2007, 2003? When are the times that people need this? Because when I was designing the site expansion experience, I wanted to make sure that we captured that scenario, right? When do people need to have a site attach? And what is that story when you get to Config Manager 2012? So in 2007, the number one scenario where people would be using site attach was doing the initial attachment of one site to another. Now in 2012, we already do that just through the new setup wizard on a primary site. That takes care of attaching one site to another. So that's something that we already have an experience for you. The other one that we saw quite a bit was mergers and acquisitions. So I buy another company, or I guess you don't buy the company, but your company buys another company, and now you have a totally different primary site that you need to integrate into your environment. What do you do now, since you can't attach the other primary site to your hierarchy? What is the solution that we have available for you? And in Config Manager 2012, we now have migration. If you have two Service Pack 1 or two R2 sites, you can migrate from one to the other. Now, the benefits of that migration are that you get to pick the things that come over. In the old site attach model, whenever you try to do an attach, you'd get everything. Every single thing that was sitting on that site would come and join into your environment as well. And so you had a bunch of stale data that would come with it. In this case, you get to select only the things that are important to you, that are important to your business, and bring them over into your environment, and then deploy the additional primary sites to continue the management. Now, once again, primary sites are not unique in Config Manager 2012. There is nothing about a primary site that can't be globally replicated or instantly pulled up from a client if a primary site goes away. It's a scale unit at this point. So there's nothing unique that you need to save from that other site. It's just a matter of getting the metadata from one hierarchy or one environment to another, and that's what migration is for. Another thought was, how do I handle hierarchy changes? So in the past, with 2007, if you had to change a domain or you had to do a disjoin or rejoin on the domain, that would break the Config Manager instance. And what you would do is you might disjoin that broken instance from the rest of the hierarchy, and then rejoin to it later after you've handled whatever the change was. In 2012, those same things would happen. You could still technically break that primary site, but in this case, once again, that primary site is not that special. It's globally replicated. Everything comes up from the clients. So if you do lose a primary site, or you have to rename the site server or do something along those lines, you can just delete the old primary site, make the change you need, and then redeploy that primary site back. In both cases, there would always be some change or churn that would occur on the primary site, either through the attach or the redeploy. In this case, though, there's just a much cleaner environment of basically our fourth scenario, which is a problematic or broken attach. One thing that seemed to be in common, especially in SMS 2003, was that attach might get started but not quite finish. Or you might have weird things that would occur where you try to attach and yet ownership of objects might not transfer, or there might be other issues. So this is something that now is no longer an issue. The attach always had some structural limitations, specifically in how fast it could process that change, and now that's entirely out of the picture because there's no such thing as site attach. So I mentioned before, the mergers and acquisition case, we're now pointing to the migration scenario as the way to address that. Now, in 2012, we did not have a direct upgrade from 2007, and the scope of migration in that product was specifically about migrating from the old 2007 hierarchy the objects and entities that were important from 2007 into 2012. Now, the scope of the newly added same-to-same SP1, SP1, or R2 to R2 migration is that now you can pull over objects that are unique to 2012. The old migration would focus on how to bring objects to 2007, either update them or create a similar entity in 2012. Now you can just pull over the same objects that exist in both. And then one thing before I do my first demo, I do want to call out some new flexibility that is in SQL Server, or with our SQL Server, the way that we work through setup. One thing that we've definitely heard from customers in the past is that when you have a high-performance environment, you want to be able to put your LDIF and MDIF, your transaction log and your database file, onto very specific disks. Now, in the past, during setup, we would just drop it in the default SQL folder. What we've given you today is the ability to specify a new location for those files when creating or deploying the site server. So this is a way that you can go through and at the time of setup specify a specific location, probably on a different RAID array or something that will give you better throughput so that you can capture this during setup. In addition, if you're doing a recovery, if you're in that high stress period where you've lost your primary site, and you're trying to do the restore, we now have the ability to specify a different SQL Server instance. Now, those of you who've been through a disaster recovery scenario have probably had that situation where you have to remember or find an exactly identical SQL Server to what you had before. That's been the rule from SMS 2003 forward. You had to exactly replicate the SQL instance as well as the Config Manager site server that was installed on. Now you can actually restore it to a different SQL Server and not have to remove one layer of stress from that disaster recovery scenario. So let's look at our very first demo. What we're going to do is talk a little bit about expansion and migration. And the scenario that we're going to talk about is specifically a mergers and acquisition case. Now, on the screen, you can see that there is a user who has a primary site, an administrator who's running 80,000 clients. And everything is fine. Everything he does with that standalone primary works great. It's fantastic. And then suddenly, his company purchases a brand new subgroup, another company, and they have 40,000 clients on a primary site. So the question is, what needs to happen? What needs to occur using our new technologies in order to accommodate this? Now, first question out there, what is the maximum number of clients that a primary site can support? Anybody know? 100,000, that's right. So my math is sketchy, but 4,000 plus 80,000 is actually more than 100,000. Is that correct? All right, so what we're going to need to do is get a little bit of expansion here. Let's see if everything pulls up. And so the administrator is now going to have a total support of 120,000 clients. And so what he's going to need to do is set up a brand new site server. So this is a Server 2008 system. I've already provisioned it with everything for R2. And by the way, this is all R2 that you'll be seeing, a pre-release version of R2. So if anything happens, I'll be sure to file a bug report. All right. Give it a second here. So when you want to install that new central administration site, it's exactly the same experience as you would if you were, yeah, thank you. That's what comes from impatience. It's the exact same experience as if you were setting up any new central administration site. So you'd start your wizard, which is moving really slow. Let me see real quick. Well, we're going to be doing some switching up here, but let me zoom in for now. And then it just disappeared. Hold on 1 second. I think it may be waking up a little bit. So you'd go through the experience as if you were setting up a brand new CAS to begin with. What I'm actually going to do is go to my backup. So this is the slide. What you miss is that what you would take it to is, I want to set up a new CAS. I'm going to skip over the part where we do the redist and have this one already set to go. Now this is the standard wizard you've already seen, but I'll zoom in on the new stuff in just a second. This is just the language section. We want to create a new CAS though. So standard place to put in your new CAS, new location. And here's where things are going to be different. So what you've seen in the past was the ability to set up, we didn't even have this scenario. This entire page was not here. You would just zoom right on through into creating a CAS. You have a brand new option now to expand an existing standalone primary. And what you would do is specify the primary that you would like to install right here. And what it's going to do is reach out, as we saw in the slide, and do a kind of a reverse initialization from that slide. It'll pull up all that global data, and it'll be authoritative and go up to the CAS, and then after that, the CAS will be the authoritative service for all of the for all the updates. You'd be able to insert your SQL Server name, and then what I also want to call it real quick is here's the same screen that we were just looking at. You now have the ability to customize the location of your SQL Server data file. Now, by default, we'll go ahead and use the normal SQL Server locations, which is basically going to be in your MS SQL data folder. But you have the ability here to put a new path in, and what you would do is just use the absolute path on the SQL Server. So you pretend as if you were on the SQL Server instance, that's where you would input the path here. Now, everything else is exactly the same and identical. After you've specified you're going to be doing the expansion, you would configure it as you would any other CAS. You put the location of your provider, of your SQL, and then you would hit start. Now, we're not going to sit and watch a full installation. What we're going to do is skip ahead to what happens afterward. Now you have a functioning CAS. This CAS has everything on it that any other CAS would do. The other thing that we've skipped is that we've also skipped the additional synchronization. I went ahead and did that last night so that you wouldn't have to sit and watch it. But everything is fully functional as a CAS. We still haven't solved our essential issue. We now have a hierarchy, right? We now have our hierarchy, but we still haven't brought over the information in the from the system. So what we're going to need to do now is take that other environment that has been set up and pull over the data into the into our newly created hierarchy. So to do that, we'll go ahead and go into migration. Come down here on the administration node and choose source hierarchy. Right-click, specify your source hierarchy. All right. And then just come in here and put the top level configuration manager site server. Now, you don't have to do this with standalone primaries, and so that's why we're very careful to use the term top level. In the case of moving between two hierarchies, you would just put in the CAS of the other site. I'll go ahead and insert that here, infrapri2.contoso.net. And then I have an existing account all set up. Now, the accounts that you use here need to have administrative rights on the remote SQL. You can have multiple accounts that you use for that if you need to have separate security for both the SQL side as well as for the SMS provider. And by the way, this is also the exact same, the exact same setup you would have done for the 2007 migration. So right now it's going to do an initial data gathering process. Honestly, there's not just a ton on that other site, so it should be fairly quick. But as it's gathering the data, it's now going to give us a list of options that we can use in order to select the specific things that we can bring over. Now, remember what I mentioned before. In the old attach world, you would get everything, and I mean everything that used to be on that system. There was a way of going about in 2003 and 2007 where you would basically set one site to be the child. You'd let some stuff go down to it. You'd then flip it around and have that then be the parent, and then all of the objects would filter their way through so you could get them all out of that site, and then you could junk it. Or you could just add directly to your infrastructure, but then once again, you're stuck with everything that had been on that site for the past few years. So let's come through here and see what an actual migration job would look like. And what we'll do is we'll see our list. And as I mentioned, you can now go through here and pick the specific things that you want to bring over. So as an example, in this case, there's a lot of interesting objects on the site. We have a 40 gigabyte WIM we could bring over. We have some five-year-old drivers for obsolete hardware, or we have the mission-critical application from that company. I'm going to go ahead and choose to leave behind the other stuff and just bring over the mission-critical app. In addition, under the applications, we also have a number of potential winners here. We have America Online 2.0, Encarta for MS-DOS, my favorite, Microsoft Bob, or that thing your boss made you deploy that once. I'm actually going to go ahead and pick the best app ever because that sounds interesting to me. So let's go ahead and add that in here, and we'll uncheck the rest. Once again, you can leave all the flotsam and jetsam behind, all those Word for Windows 6 deployments or that time that somebody decided to set up 18 different apps for 18 different collections. Those can all stay, and you can keep your app model stuff or just the things you need for the migration. You can choose to point to a specific site. Typically, you want to point to the site that is going to be the new primary site that will be working with those clients so that the ownership stays intact. So we'll go ahead and move over next. In this case, we didn't have any collections. We'll apply the default security scope. And we'll run the migration job immediately. Okay. Let's refresh this real quick. So the job is running. I'm too impatient. So let's go to our software library. Look under application management. Look under applications. See if it timed out. Not quite yet. Go to packages. Oh, here is our mission critical application. Already moved its way over. Bet you if we come back up here to the applications, still nothing there. There we go. The best app ever has just been migrated from our other site. So the scenario is, if you're in this situation, and you had a standalone primary that was working, and now your organization has grown, either through organic growth or through mergers and acquisitions, what have you, you now have the ability to take that standalone primary that you were using that had the smallest administrative footprint and the smallest infrastructural imprint and grow with your environment to now have that central administration site. You were then able to migrate over the important pieces from that other environment, right? Without having to try to shoehorn it into your environment, you just take the things you want. And then once that's done, you can deploy a new primary site. So now you can support your 120,000 clients. You have all the entities, all the objects, all the data that you needed. And now you can just remove that old hardware. Or one thing that we've heard in the past from other customers who've approached this is that they may, before they bring all the objects over and then format and reuse that hardware to then become that second box. And basically, you have the exact same footprint. The only thing you've added now is a CAS, and you can manage those additional users. All right, so we're getting into some of the potpourri side. Some of the things that we've done to ease infrastructure is we have this idea of easy client mobility. We have this thought that we need to load balance. So once again, if you saw before on that previous slide, we would have 1,000 clients on one primary site, and assuming that we pulled them all over 40,000, let's say you now wanted to load balance so that you had 60 and 60, you could do that through the client reassignment that's available now. Now, one thing to be aware of, this is not a disaster recovery solution. This is not something that you can use without having the primary site active and able to talk to its clients. So what that means is you actually have to be able to be on the primary site and reassign the clients over. If that primary site is not there, then you can't do that recovery. And that is noted here. Multiple network access accounts. I think I alluded to this before. This is something that seems small, but actually is big. Now, one of the things that we talked about in 2012 that was a brand new and just fantastic thing to help you with having a smaller hardware footprint was this idea that, hey, use a standalone primary, and for all the different domains that you have, just drop an MP out there. So manage all of those domains, even if they're untrusted domains, using site roles out there. And that was actually the total inverse of the 2007 and 2003 policy. In those hierarchies, we always told you put a site server in the other domain and keep all of your site roles, with the exception of some of the internet-based site roles, but keep all of your site roles inside of the same domain as the site server. Now, what we find is that by putting just the site role in proximity to the clients that need to be managed, it's actually a much smaller footprint. You're not having to deploy SQL and a primary site and its MP and its SUP out there. You just put the specific site system that you need. Now, the drawback to that, though, was what about network access accounts? So you're managing all these different domains all over the place. You've got untrusted domains, trusted domains, cross-force, everything is there. And now you need to deploy operating system to that other domain. You get one network access account, though. That was the 2012 SP1 model. Now, in R2, we'll give you the ability to use multiple network access accounts. And basically, it'll be similar to a client push account. It'll try the different network access accounts that are available to it, and you can now fully realize the multiple domain management of having one primary site and then just putting those MPs where they need to be. Now, for compatibility's sake, if you're using an older client, et cetera, basically, they will just use the top network access account listed as the only one that it will try. That's just sort of a compatibility issue. Basically, the lesson from that is that you should upgrade your clients as soon as possible. Okay, and speaking of upgrade is very interesting when you're looking at a hierarchy. In general, though, the rule of thumb is the same as what it was with the older versions of Config Manager and SMS. You should start at the top and work your way down. Now, the reason why we're calling this an infrastructure discussion is that there are new requirements for upgrade that didn't exist before. And a lot of them have to do with the Windows Assessment Deployment Toolkit, or ADK. Now, we used to have Wake, which was the approximate same thing in the old versions of Config Manager and SMS. We've now replaced that with the ADK. The ADK is no longer something that is integrated into the Config Manager disk. You have to provision it separately. On TechNet, we have the specific locations. We also have them here about where exactly you need to put which component of the ADK. One thing I can definitely recommend is don't just spin the entire ADK and put it onto all your different site servers, because it takes an hour and a half just to install. We only need very specific things on very specific locations. One thing to be aware of is that SP1 clients cannot be assigned to RTM sites. And one thing that we always recommend for any upgrade, and we've been saying this since SMS 2003 SP2, is to run the TestDB upgrade validation against a copy of your site database before you actually kick off the upgrade. We find something like 90% of the upgrade issues and errors that are encountered have to do with unique data fragments or what have you that exist inside the database. You can catch all of those by running TestDB upgrade, and instead of having a business down disaster recovery scenario, it's a quick phone call to CSS to say, hey, why did I get this result? And they can work you through what to do. So once again, always run TestDB. And we have documentation online about how to run that at TechNet. But where it gets somewhat complex is when you have a hierarchy in upgrade. Because in the world of Config Manager 2012, we have global SQL replication occurring at all times. Now, in the 2007-2003 world, everything was file-based, and basically, not a lot was being replicated. Only certain entities would be replicated. And so it's very easy to have an interoperability layer where you just wouldn't process most things coming in on those sites. Not the case in a SQL replication model in which all schema and all global data items need to be identical. So we have this Service Pack 1 interoperability mode in which certain things cannot be made when a hierarchy is in interop mode. So what does that mean exactly? So here is a hierarchy. It hasn't been upgraded yet. It's just the upgrade that it's just the hierarchy as it exists. So there is no interop going on. Now the moment though that I upgrade that CAS, suddenly the entire hierarchy is in interop mode. And if you try to create a Service Pack 1 specific item, even if it appears in the console, you will get a message that says that while you are in interop mode, you cannot create those new objects. Basically, it's a tantalizing reminder of all the new functionality that's coming, and also a spur that says try to upgrade as quickly as possible. So be aware of the fact that as long as there's a single primary site that has not been upgraded, certain objects will not be available to you, and you'll see that message. So as soon as possible, try to get the primary sites in your hierarchy all upgraded so you can get rid of that box and start using all that brand new SP1 functionality. So let's talk a little bit about replication configuration improvements. Now, there have been a lot of things. The replication was brand new in 2012. We moved from the old file-based replication to SQL replication. We're talking about instant global replication of entities and objects across the entire hierarchy. However, there were a lot of requests that came from that with regards to how do I manage that, what do I look at. And so what we've done is streamlined a bunch of things to give you greater control over how your bandwidth is being used for the replication. So first thing off is we now have compression. So we can decrease the CAS traffic size by almost 70%. This is actually turned on by default, which means that out of the box, your SP1 and R2 sites will actually be using less bandwidth than your RTM sites did. We also gave you the ability to change a couple things in the console that previously required you having to go through SQL and making manual changes. So we had it documented on how to make a change, but now you can do it just by going into the ports. And we'll take a look in just a second at exactly where you can find those things and how to set them. Something else that's new for being able to manage kind of the network load that comes from replication is distributed views. And what we definitely recommend is that you have well-connected site servers for this. When you turn this on, basically what's going to happen is we're not going to replicate anymore. What we're going to do instead is run a distributed query that then hits all of the different databases for the site data. So that way, instead of having to have all the replication occurring, we just run that script, it immediately hits all the primary sites, and we return that back to you on the system. So it goes without saying that you should have fantastic connectivity between your primary sites and your CAS in order to support distributed views. It definitely will improve the SQL Server performance, improve your use of network bandwidth, but it does have some caveats in that you can only have a single SRS, that's the reporting service on the CAS, and you can only have a single provider on the CAS, and we also don't support clusters. So that's one of those things where it can, for a very small environment where you're basically hosting everything inside of a single data center, you can take advantage of the data, of the DView. The other thing you can do is schedule your site data. Now, a lot of the traffic on the links is site data that's basically client data for the most part that is replicated from primary sites up to the CAS, right? And that's usually there for reporting purposes, so you can run those combined reports on the CAS. So that actually represents a bulk of the stuff that's being moved up, and you can actually schedule that now so that it can you know, basically use your excessive bandwidth. If you know that the data center is going to be quieter at night than will be during the day, you can make sure that we only send that up. So once again, it improves your bandwidth, improves your SQL performance. The other is that you can now customize your link status. We've gotten a lot of feedback in the past where people have said basically, you know, as soon as I set up my system, as soon as I did anything in there, suddenly my link status was degraded. And there's been some explanations out there, some TetNet articles, some blogs, where the definition of what degraded means has been explained. It doesn't mean that things are necessarily broken. It just means that things are slow. And in some cases, things are just kind of always going to be slow. So what you can do now is change your thresholds for what equals degraded and what equals failed, so that instead of constantly seeing all these links in a graded state for something that will always be a little slow, you can now customize it for your environment so that you can know that for your bandwidth and what you have in your environment, that if it's now degraded, boy, that means something, because now it really means that there's an issue. The feedback we used to get, especially around the site system status monitor. How many of you have 2007 and have looked in your site system status monitor and seen that everything is red? Yeah. There used to be a joke when I was a support engineer that if everything was green, your site system status, it meant there was a problem, because that meant that stuff wasn't reporting. So we've taken that at face value. We've worked really hard to give you the ability to fine-tune what this works so that we find that if people keep seeing that something is red, they ignore it. And so we want you to have the ability to customize that so that when it's red, it means something. All right, so let's take a quick moment, and we'll just look through some of the different different components. All right, so let's head up to the CAS. Okay, so we're on the CAS right now. Actually, let me head back to the application. So if you go to the monitoring node, and then go to the database replication, you'll see the link. Now, in a large hierarchy, you'll see a number of links between the primary sites and the CAS. What you can do, though, is go on to the link properties. And here is where you can set up a lot of the features that we just talked about. So there's distributed views. And right here, we do call out a lot of the caveats that we mentioned before. So there must be a single SMS provider. We don't support the CAS. In addition, the moment that you try to, not the CAS, clusters, the moment that you try to select one of these, in case you missed it before, we will show you again, by the way, distributed views, clusters not supported, must only have one provider, et cetera, et cetera. So you can't miss the fact that you need to have those things in place. And in fact, each one of these that you select, you'll see the same thing. But it is important to call out, you do have granularity here between these types. It's not just turning on the DVUs for everything. You actually have specific kinds of site data that you can leverage for distributed views. Once again, this is actually a really good solution if you're in a well-connected environment and you don't need to have the things like the cluster or the multiple providers, et cetera. So basically, a smaller environment would be ideal for using this. So I'm going to uncheck those things real quick. So scheduling. as I mentioned before, you now have the ability to schedule. This may look very familiar to you. It's the exact same wizard that they used in the for distribution points. Same exact way of blocking out time in which the replication can and will occur. And you can also set it for different sorts of site data to use that replication. And then finally, the alerts. Actually, I take that back. This is the way to set up alerts for the... Okay, yeah, here it is down at the bottom. So here's where the retries exist for the group data, and you can set that threshold so that you can get a more accurate alert. So the other thing to look at is on the databases themselves, off that same link. You can also see the options to change and customize the retention level as well as the broker port. On the top, you'll see the broker port. The broker port is the actual port that's being used for the replication. For those of you who may not know, we use SQL Server Broker in order to do the actual transfer between the CAS and the primary. That's the technology that's being leveraged. So by default, it's 4022. That's what you can set. You also have the opportunity to set this earlier, but you can change this. You can always change it using a complex SQL procedure that was documented on TechNet. Now you can just do it through the UI. Here is the data compression. As I mentioned, our preliminary analysis indicates you can have up to 70% compression for the CAS traffic. That is enabled by default, which means out of the box, you could see up to 70% less bandwidth being used for that CAS replication traffic. And then finally, the data retention period. This is set right here. It's between 1 and 14 days. The default is 5. Now, this comes in for something called reinitialization. Basically, if there is a scenario in which one site has not talked to a CAS for more than a certain amount of time, the CAS is only going to retain so many changes to communicate. So if it's 4 days and you've got it set for 5 days, it will retain basically the net effect of all the changes, and the moment that the other site comes back online or it can now talk to the CAS again, it will then send down the last 4 days' worth of changes. On the other hand, if you go outside of that retention threshold, then it no longer has all the changes available for that system, and it goes through what's called a reinitialization. That's where all the global data is packaged up and shot down to the primary site and then reapplied. Now that, depending on the size of your database, can be fairly large amounts of data. So there's a decision to be made here about how big your global retention period should be. Should it be long enough so that I can have sites offline for quite some time and they can catch up on any changes that they've missed? Or should it be short enough so that all those changes aren't having to be stored in your database and adding additional overhead from all the different changes that are being stored and the performance hit from having to constantly record all these changes against a constantly growing database? So it's between performance of the SQL Server on the CAS, really, and the needs for sites going down, et cetera. For the most part, 5 days is a happy medium. To be honest with you, most sites aren't going to go down for longer than that, and it also strikes a happy medium with the amount of data. However, as you get up into larger hierarchies, 200,000, 300,000 users or devices, you do see a scenario in which you now have like an enormous 2 terabyte database or something, and holding on to 5 days worth of changes for something that's moving that fast can become a huge burden onto the SQL Server. So it's something to definitely look at within your own environment and make the call as to what would be appropriate. And you can play with that figure. All right. So those are the replication improvements. Now let's talk a little bit about distribution points. So does anybody remember branch distribution points? Who used branch distribution points? I can remember when we were first working on branch distribution points and people were coming to conferences and they were saying, you know, secondary sites are going away. We're going to replace them with branch distribution points. And that didn't quite work out. If you remember, our branch distribution point was basically taking the client framework and using it to act as a distribution point. The same way that a client would download its content, this distribution point would be a lightweight, client-oriented tool to download and then work from there. It would have the same bits transmission and everything, and you know, it would basically be a lightweight means of scaling out additional DPs. And it would also use a pull dynamic. And why is a pull dynamic interesting? Because in the current method that we use for copying things off the site server, that distribution manager, it's very much a push mechanism. That means every time you move out a piece of content, the site server on the SMS executive has to make a conscious decision, has to process it, and then copy it out. So the bottleneck in that process is the site server. Getting into a pull dynamic is where we want to be, because in that case, the processing is actually distributed out amongst the DPs themselves. So the branch distribution point didn't quite hack it. It wasn't robust enough. It didn't provide the functionality that customers really needed. And we already added throttling into distribution points for 2012 RTM. And so for SP1, we added the pull dynamic into a standard distribution point. And the way that the pull DP works is you have one standard DP, and this is where the site server does its push out to that new source DP. And then the pull DPs then use the source DP as their source. There's a way that the policy is communicated down to them, and they then connect and download their content. Now, from a scale perspective, this opens up new opportunities to support more distribution points on a per-site basis. Now, we're still doing some tests. For SP1, there were still some things that needed to be handled on the distribution manager side. What we found now with the R2 pull DPs is that the number that we can support is growing. Those tests are still being worked on, and with the release of R2, we'll have an updated support statement for exactly how many DPs, but we're now looking at exceeding the current supported number, which is, I believe, 250, 245, something like that. Anyway, the couple of hundred that we have, and pushing that number further north to something somewhat on par to what we had with previous releases of Configuration Manager. So be looking for those announcements as we get closer to the release of R2. So in addition to the pull DPs, another new type of distribution point that we have is the cloud or Azure distribution point. So what you get with a cloud DP is all the benefits of the cloud. Basically, it's always on, it's always available, somebody else is taking care of it. Now, for the vast majority of what you're using, if you're in a large environment with lots of systems all within one subnet or group of networks, a cloud DP may not be the best decision for you. You'll just stick a standard DP out there and can service multiple requests. But for the branch office scenario, in which you have very few clients across a slow link, instead of having to centralize that management, instead of having to drop one DP to support five users, you could instead use this cloud DP that's always on, always available on the internet distribution point, and then use that as the source for those particular clients to deploy their content. So it's getting all the magic of the cloud and not having to deploy another box, once again reducing the amount of infrastructure that you need to support your clients. In addition, we've also added some great improvements for content management. Pull DPs and standard DPs, we've talked about the pull DPs a little bit. In general also, we've also got some optimization so that if we have a superseded application on the client side, we're no longer downloading the entire app. We're basically just pulling down the deltas between the superseded app and the regular app. And we also have a brand new report, which will definitely help administrators in how they will deploy their DPs and figure out where to position DPs within their environment. This is called the Distribution Point Usage Report. It actually is pulled off of data for how many clients are talking to a given DP. This is based on customer feedback where folks have said, you know what, I have no clue exactly how many DPs or how many clients are using a particular DP. With this new report, you'll be able to pull up something that says, hey, 90% of your clients are talking to one distribution point. Maybe you should move a DP sitting in this subnet over into this subnet to help out. You'll even be able to see with that cloud DP just exactly how many clients are using that, and that way you can get a feel for where you need to position some of your resources. So once again, smarter deployment of infrastructure, of being able to find where to position these things so that you can get rid of boxes you don't need and put the infrastructure where it really needs to be in order to provide an experience to customers. Speaking of reports, we've also got some new replication traffic reports. You can there's a whole group of them here. Now, I'm not going to demo them off of the box there because, honestly, it's one site and it's shipping down a couple of metadata for applications. Instead, I've got some snapshots from a much larger report. This is actually from the MSIT report, MSIT internal deployment of the of Configuration Manager. You can see that you can look at things on a site code basis and get the, let's see, do I have a zoom on this? I think I do. Hold on. All right, let's see if I can zoom in a little bit down here. There you go. So you can see that you have the total megabytes being moved across the network, the average, the maximum, and the minimum. So you have a way of benchmarking your environment. You can also break that down into a nice little pie chart so that you can zoom in down to the configuration data level, the specific replication group. So remember how before you were able to look at distributed views or for site data scheduling, and it had in there, oh, do you want to do this with inventory or do you want to set this up with other types of data? Now you can actually see the replication group name here, and this will allow you to say, hey, it looks like it's configuration data that is taking up a lot of my bandwidth. So I think I'm going to pursue a distributed view solution, or I'm going to start setting up a schedule for that so it's happening during off times. And now, probably my favorite part of the new reporting stuff that we've added is the role-based administration for reporting. So not only are you going to get the ability to use role-based access in order to customize what reports can be seen, you can also customize the specific data returned in that report. So what that means is if I'm a user, and this is for R2, if I'm a user who is scoped to a given collection and I run a report, I will only see things in that report for the specific collection I have scope on. Now, why does this come in on an infrastructure presentation? It's because now you can use this level of delegation to have one or two boxes and have multiple users sharing them, right? They can still have that separate security boundary there that they have scope on a specific group of resources, and they will only see reports and entities for what they have scope on. You can have a site that's supporting both Texas and New York, and the New Yorkers will only see information about the clients in New York, and the Texans will only see information about the clients in Texas, and all of that's occurring on just one primary site. So let's actually take a look at that in practice. Let's see if I can get this moved over here. Ta-da. Okay. So we're on our CAS right now. What I'm going to do is show you how we've configured a couple of security principles here. We always have fun names that we use for folks. And so right now we've got, hold on. There they are. Oh, I had a moment of panic there. Sorry, I clicked on the wrong node. All right, so we have three users. We have Al, Meg, and Owen. So Al is a full administrator. And to make this even easier, I'm going to add on collections here. So Al is a full administrator, and he has he's scoped to all systems, all users, all groups. He can see everything. We're going to drop down to Owen. Owen is a software updates administrator, and he is scoped basically as a software update manager. And while he has access to everything, he can only see software updates related reports. And finally, we have Meg. Meg is a full administrator, just like Albert. Technically, she has full control over everything, except we've limited Meg to only one collection called Pilot, which means she can only see information in a report and really on any principle that exists for entities within that Pilot collection. Okay. So what I'm going to do is run a basic report. We'll go into monitoring. We'll fire off reports. Right now I'm logged in as Al. Please hold on a second. Let me just make sure that I'm... This might be the world's shortest demo if I'm not logged in as Al. All right, come in. Yep. I'm Al. Okay. So right now I'm logged in as Al. We're just going to run a very simple report to make things nice and easy. Just the computers in a specific site. As a full administrator, I have access to all of the reports that are listed here. And now it's taking some time. I have access to all the different reports that are available, and I can do anything within here that that I need to do. It's the benefits of being a full admin. Okay. And what you're going to do, while I'm doing that in the background, I'll just show you that, oh, never mind, I'll just do this real quick. What I see when I run this report is a long time loading for what are going to be two clients. So when I run the report, I see two clients. That's what I have. If I come back out to the collections themselves, I can see that in the Pilot collection, I only have one client. So let's see how this transpires if I log in as a different user. Let's log in as Owen. Remember, Owen is the updates administrator. He was scoped only to see updates. So now let's go back to reporting as soon as it finishes logging in. So let's go back to the reporting and go to my desktop. Go back into the console and let's see what reports are available to us. And bear with me just a second while this logs in. So as you can tell, there's already a stripped-down version of some of the different entities under administration. And when I come to the reports node, so there are two levels here. One is access to reports. We've integrated the RBA so that when this user comes in and tries to access the reports, he only sees reports that are about software updates. Software updates, or in this case, network access protection, falls under the same group. The report that I ran, computers in a specific site, is not even available to this user because within the scope of his role, he doesn't have access to it. So in that case, once again, by setting the security role for that user, I've locked him down from even being able to see the reports for the other side. But now let's look at Meg. This is R2, that's correct. All right, hopefully it's warmed up now. So now let's look at Meg. Now remember what we did with Meg is we scoped her to just one collection that had only one client in it, knowing that based on his role, he couldn't even see the report. Now Meg, as a full administrator, should have access to all the different reports, but let's see what the output looks like with her scoped down access. Once again, the equivalent to this would be as if you had a user who could only access clients for Texas versus users who would see New York. They'd only see the ones that they are basically in charge of. It's the equivalent of being able to set up the access only for those groups. Okay. Is there a site general? Yeah, computers in a specific site. We'll try running the report. And good thing it's caching. And now when Meg runs the report, once it's the exact same report, she has the exact same rights as Al, except in this case, it only returns one client. That's the one client that she has scope for within her collection. So what you get to see here is the ability to set up different roles, different rights, and truly on one server be able to answer all the questions about, well, I don't want people to be able to see information about my group, my area. You now have that ability to configure that. You always had that for all the other entities in the system, and now we've extended it to reporting so that you have the full end-to-end scenario. That's a good question, and let's talk about that after because we're almost done here. A couple of things, just a couple of quick hits here. We now have the ability to do secondary site recovery. This was a big ask for from customers. The problem was, what happens if I lose my secondary sites? In SMS 2003, we had the ability to recover a secondary site. You could do a backup and then a restore. In Config Manager 2007, ironically, we had a way of backing up secondary sites. We just didn't have a way of recovering them. The story for 2007 and 2012 RTM was that if something bad happened on a secondary site, cut it loose, reformat the system, and then redeploy. However, we know that a lot of folks are using secondary sites is a way of adding additional distribution points to their environment. So if you had a problem with the secondary site, and you cut it loose and then you redeployed, you now had to worry about redeploying all the content all over again to the distribution points underneath it. And with folks having up to 250 distribution points dangling off a single secondary site, the administrative overhead that came with it was basically not sustainable. So what we've given you is the ability to take a secondary site, and if it has any problems, any issues, disappears, you can come through here, select a site, and just click on recover that secondary site. You can do that even if the secondary site is listed as active, because as we know, there are times when a secondary site disappears but just hasn't yet shown up as not being active. And what that will do is it'll take all the metadata that exists in the primary site's database about that secondary site, all of its site roles. Basically, everything that's important about that secondary site is sitting inside a global data that's actually sitting on the CAS as well, right? All the interesting information is no longer sitting in a file in an inbox somewhere. It's sitting in SQL. So all we do is we take that data, we redeploy a secondary site with the exact same identical information, and boom, you get back everything that you had before as far as the configuration, the distribution points, et cetera, that were there. Now, one thing to work around a little bit is if you've got a problem where the distribution points have been damaged, we're not going to automatically remediate the distribution point problems. So as an example, we've had this idea of what if a secondary site falls into an ocean or something. The box itself is gone. What we can do is redeploy the secondary site with all the metadata onto a new box. But if there was content on there, we're not going to know that the content is gone because we're basically taking it off of a snapshot that exists in the global data. So what you would do then is remediate that yourself, basically redeploy on the specific distribution points that may have been damaged or what have you. So that's one thing to think about during the secondary site recovery. Understand what's happened to your machine. There may need to be some additional steps to redeploy content, these DPs, but it's better than having to recreate entirely the entire environment. All right, so I really appreciate you guys coming and spending time with me here. We talked about hierarchy simplification. We talked about some new content. We talked about some great new stuff in reporting, as well as a potpourri of different improvements that we've made on the infrastructure itself, be that secondary site recovery or the ability to set things and set up for the database files. We also have, as I mentioned at the very beginning, a lot of other related sessions that you can take advantage of. And you see them listed here. You can also come down to our booth where we'll also give you more information. And if you have any other additional questions, you can definitely come up and ask me. I will be up here for the next 5 minutes or so. Be happy to answer any questions you may have. But thank you once again for coming this morning.